Welcome to Steps to Value, the podcast focused on optimizing health IT investments. Hi, I'm Rod Pihowski, Senior Director, Health Information Systems at HIMSS. In this series, you'll hear the leading strategies, tactics, and innovative approaches used to achieve high levels of value from health IT. Today, we've got Dr. Ricky Bloomfield Jr. with us. Dr. Bloomfield gets the mobile space from the inside out. Not only is he a physician, but he's also a developer, and he'll share thoughts about mobile app development, Duke's integration of HealthKit, and more. We'll also hear from David Collins, Senior Director, mHealth here at HIMSS, and he'll talk about current mHealth trends. All that and more coming up. This is the Steps to Value podcast. Mobile health is now more than a $1 billion industry, and it's expected to grow to more than $20 billion by 2018. Today's guest, Dr. Ricky Bloomfield Jr., is Director of Mobile Technology Strategy, and he's a pediatric and internal medicine hospitalist at Duke Medicine. Now, in addition to rolling out mobile applications associated with Duke's Epic EHR system, Ricky is currently collaborating with multiple entities both inside and outside Duke to establish an open technology platform for mobile health innovation. Dr. Bloomfield led the integration of HealthKit at Duke in 2014 and also led Duke to become the first health system with the Epic EHR to incorporate Smart on Fire platform, enabling a new generation of plug-and-play medical applications. Ricky, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get the acronyms out of the way. Could you please explain to us what SMART and FHIR are and what they mean for doctors and patients?
Sure, great question. So I'll start with FHIR. FHIR stands for Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, and that's a mouthful. So FHIR is obviously easier to say. And this actually falls under the HL7 umbrella, which is Health Level 7. Most people just know it as HL7. But if you go to their website, you can read all about FHIR. But FHIR is a set of APIs that are really designed for healthcare, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more in a little bit. SMART stands for Substitutable Medical Apps and Reusable Technologies. And that's a platform that takes the FHIR APIs and adds some other important bits like authentication and authorization. So you can create an all-in-one app that can then be plugged into an EHR. At least that's the vision.
So SMART rides on FHIR?
Correct. SMART makes use of FHIR as well as technology like OAuth2, OpenID Connect, things that like OAuth that are used by Google and Facebook and all the cloud and social media companies that you're used to in order to log into their system. So very familiar technologies, and it's taking that and applying it to healthcare.
Okay. So one other thing that we mentioned when we were introducing you is HealthKit at Duke. What exactly is that, and how will that change the practice of medicine moving forward?
Sure. So HealthKit is a technology that was introduced by Apple a little over a year ago, and it really makes it possible for users to collect medical information or health information and store it on their phone. And that can come from a variety of sources, such as a HealthKit-enabled scale, a glucometer, a blood pressure cuff, an activity tracker, and many other devices that now work with technology. It's open so that any vendor can create an app that works with it. And then once the user collects all that information, he or she can simply manage it on the phone themselves and view it for their own personal enrichment and health, or they can choose to share that information using HealthKit with other apps that may be able to take that information and do important and useful things with that information to help that user take better care of him or herself. And what we did was we worked with Apple and Epic to integrate this into our system through the Epic MyChart app, which is the patient portal created by Epic. And they have an app for iOS as well as Android. In this case, it was the iOS app. And once the user is collecting HealthKit data, they can then choose to share that data through the MyChart app, and that data can then come directly to that individual's provider or physician at Duke. And there are many reasons why that would be helpful, but what we were having a lot of people come to us and saying we really need to start collecting data about our patients in order to take better care of them. And some of the use cases were in cardiology, for example, the patients with congestive heart failure are often asked to measure their weight on a daily basis or their blood pressure on a daily basis. And the state of the art for that for many years has been a 3x5 index card or something equivalent, and the patient taking the measurements, writing it down on that index card, and they may or may not, first of all, may or may not remember to take the measurements, and second of all, may or may not remember to bring it in to their physician. And that information is important, obviously, because the physician needs to take into account measurements from home in order to make better clinical decisions for that patient. A snapshot of vital signs once every 3 months when that patient comes into the office is not very useful. It has limited utility because we really need to know how patients are doing at home, where hopefully they spend the vast majority of their time and not in healthcare environments. What HealthKit does is makes it possible for us to collect that data and really lower the barrier of entry and remove the obstacles that are there to getting that information to the providers.
So what kind of a difference has it made at Duke? How has it affected your patients, and how are you measuring whether there's a benefit to having done this?
Well, I think it's been less than a year since we've had this up, so we have some limited experience, and we're working on rolling it out more broadly. But we do have some interesting anecdotes already about ways that this has helped. We actually had one patient, and he's given me permission to share this. I'm not going to mention his name, but he started to use this technology, and was traveling abroad. And it was actually on a vacation, I believe. And the technology was sending this information. He continued to check his blood pressure while he was away to his primary care doctor. And the primary care doctor got some alerts that the blood pressure was a little bit lower than normal. And so his doctor, she reached out to him and said, I've noticed some of your values are a little bit low. Why don't you cut the dose of your blood pressure medication in half, and we'll see what that does. And so he immediately did that, and the blood pressure returned to the normal levels. And so it's clear that wouldn't have happened if the physician was waiting for him to return from his trip abroad, bring in his index card, show it to her. It just wouldn't have had the same impact. This is going to change how we practice medicine.
Excellent. So once you have that trending data, then people can pay attention to it. You on the clinical side, you can pay attention to it and actually reach out and connect with that person and make an adjustment on the fly. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is it's all built into the EHR workflow. And so these alerts come right into the provider's message basket. And they view them just like they would any other. So it's well integrated, and it makes sense, and it makes possible this type of improvement.
And how challenging was it to get this integrated into the workflow?
Well, it was actually well thought out by Epic. They did a lot of the work to integrate this into their system, and we were able to deploy it. And it was actually not that much work to get this going in our system. And so from a technical standpoint, that's really not the biggest hurdle. What we see as the biggest hurdle moving forward is actually working on improving the workflow in clinics so that we can scale this up. Imagine a provider who has a panel of 2,000 patients, and even 10% of those start using this type of monitoring technology at home and start sending in information about their weight or activity or blood pressure to these providers on a daily basis, and you can see how that could quickly become overwhelming. So we do have some flexibility in setting thresholds for those alerts, Or we can choose not to send any alerts to the providers at all, and they can check manually. But we think there's value there in working through these alerts, trying to figure out and triage which are important so that we can make the best decision with the information that's coming in. And I don't think that's a problem that anyone has really solved yet, how we take that massive amount of information, although there are a lot of people who are working on it. And so those are things that we're considering as well. How do we take all that information and put it into a digestible format so that we're not overwhelming our doctors, but we're providing them another tool that they can use to make better clinical decisions?
Well, you seem to be one of the people who are working on that problem and others. Let me ask you this. What was your mHealth aha moment, and how did that experience of getting involved in the development of mobile apps affect your perspective on delivery of medicine?
Great question. So I had always had an interest in technology, sort of as a hobby, although I actually didn't write code. I always built my own computers and had fun doing that. And when I made the decision to go to medical school, it was because I enjoyed math and science, and I also was passionate about giving back in a meaningful way and helping people, and medicine seemed to do that. I didn't see at the time how computers and informatics fit in, so I didn't really pursue it. That is not until I started my residency. So I went through 4 years of medical school, and then I started my residency at UNC Chapel Hill, and I saw something there that I hadn't seen before, and that was UNC had a homegrown electronic health record system. And I was so green around the gills when it came to informatics and medicine at the time that I didn't even realize that was a thing, that hospitals had written their own systems. And when I became more familiar with that and what they had done and why, it became very clear to me early on in my residency that there was an essential need for physicians who understood technology. And while I didn't have much to show for myself at the time, I was passionate about it. And immediately this was something that clicked in my mind, and I said, I need to figure out how I can help here. And so what I did was the summer after my intern year in my internal medicine and pediatrics residency, I bought two books from Amazon on how to write iOS apps, basically. This was 2 years after the iPhone had been released and 1 year after the App Store was public. So apps were still a very, very new thing. This was the summer of 2009. And so I started writing apps. I basically went through this book chapter by chapter, taught myself how to write these apps, and about 6 months later had written an app that's still in use today at UNC called UNC HouseStaff. And that app was an attempt of mine to solve a problem that I had. And that problem was I was tired of carrying around all this paper and phone numbers and documents in my white coat that, you know, weighed us down throughout the day. And I knew that the future was going to be taking all this and putting it into an app. And an app like that didn't exist at the time. So I wrote an app that did exactly that. It had a hospital directory, a paging system, useful websites, and useful documents from many of the divisions at the hospital. And I put it out there. And it's still available for free for UNC to use. And I get requests from time to time to update it. So that's how that started. And then shortly thereafter, in the spring of 2010, and just a few months after that app was released, I got an idea for another app that would solve another problem that I had. There's sort of a theme there. And that was to take all of Google's mobile websites and put it into one easy-to-use app. And so over a two-week spring break, I wrote this app and then submitted it to the App Store. And from there, ended up starting a company that's gone on to have over 15 million downloads of that and other apps. But what I realized was that opened my eyes to the potential here. But that particular experience was those apps were more social networking in that company, and I wanted to get back to healthcare. So towards the end of my residency, I met Jeff Ferranti at Duke, who's now our CIO, and spent some time with him and realized that there's a lot we need to do in mobile technology and healthcare. And so I turned my attention towards that, and he asked me to come join him at Duke. And so I've been here for the last 2 years trying to push the needle forward in mobile healthcare. And we've seen tremendous growth in the entire space over the last few years, and it's been exciting to be a part of that.
And people come to you with ideas for apps?
Oh, they do all the time, and I wish I had the bandwidth to help all of them. I think mostly what my role has been is to help them find the most likely path to success, and that can often be employing an outside vendor to develop their app, an outside company. We're working on some apps being developed internally, and one of the most recent is actually our research kit app that was just launched today, actually, October 15th, which is an app called Autism and Beyond, and trying to push that needle forward in autism screening through a mobile device using Apple's research kit platform. So there are use cases where we can develop apps internally, but large academic medical centers typically aren't the best at creating huge development infrastructures. I think there's a need for us to do that, and we have worked to put together some really talented folks for development, but ultimately we're not going to be able to satisfy the need of all the amazing innovators we have here at Duke, and I think that's probably similar for most other health systems. So we have to pick and choose, and right now we're focusing on developing infrastructure that will help enable our innovators to do really, really amazing things, which is what we've seen so far.
All right, I'm going to take you on a completely different path here for our last question.
Sure.
According to your bio, you're a saxophonist and you play in a big band in the Raleigh area. Who influences you?
Great question. It's funny you'd ask. I actually have interesting stories there. So I grew up in rural part of eastern North Carolina, did not really have anyone around me who really knew jazz. So I came into jazz through basically interest, and that interest started because we would there was a place that we would go in the summer where they would play music, and they played a lot of Kenny G. Kenny G is not known to be a quintessential jazz player in the same vein as other jazz artists. And so growing up in middle school and high school, I would listen to Kenny G, and I would continue to play with him, blasting through our little stereo system until I could mimic what he did. I'm not as good as Kenny G. I don't want to imply that, but I would try to mimic what I heard. Then when I got to college and played in the jazz ensemble at NC State, I realized what real jazz was. My favorite jazz saxophonist by far is Stan Getz, who popularized bossa nova, but he also is one of the most technically proficient saxophonists from the bebop era, and then moving forward, it's just fantastic. And then preceding him, Charlie Parker is also amazing and sort of defined the bebop genre. And then of course John Coltrane. You can't have a conversation about
no.
a great saxophonist without Coltrane. So I think I started in one place and ended up in another, but yeah, I love jazz. I love improvisation, and it's fun to have an outlet to express yourself in ways other than whatever your employment might be. And so playing jazz does that for me.
Excellent, and thank you for sharing that with us. Well, we are out of time, and I want to thank you, Ricky Bloomfield Jr. Ricky is Director of Mobile Technology Strategy, and he's a hospitalist at Duke Medicine. You can hear more from Ricky at the Connected Health Conference, November 8th through the 11th at the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center in Washington, D.C. Ricky, we hope you'll join us again in the future to continue this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
As we noted, the HIMSS Connected Health Conference is November 8th through the 11th in Washington, D.C. The conference this year is three summits in one, with the mHealth Summit and two new summits, the Cybersecurity and Population Health Summits. Register for one and get access to all three. Learn more at hmsconnectedhealth.org. The theme of this year's mHealth Summit is Anytime, Anywhere, Engaging Patients and Providers. David Collins, Senior Director, mHealth, here at HIMSS, joins us now by phone to tell us more. Hey, David, how are you?
Hey, Rod. I'm doing great. How are you today?
Great. Well, relative to the theme of Anytime, Anywhere, Patients and Providers, how to engage them, where are these two stakeholders at in their embrace of mHealth technologies?
Sure. Connected health has really become more and more prevalent in today's healthcare industry. Providers, I believe, are starting to see the value in terms of the efficiency and bridging the gap in care, given there's not enough providers to go around and, reaching access to care for patients. So I think that's where the two come together, and that the value is certainly being demonstrated, in the sense that, there's a emphasis to achieve greater quality, to do so at a lower cost, and remain competitive in the marketplace. And, a thought actually kind of hit me where, there's been a lot of time, energy, resources, money put into meaningful use and adoption of electronic health record technology. And, connected health is kind of the next level that bridges on to EHRs, EMRs, and the efficiencies that connected health is going to bring is going to help substantiate this initial investment in health IT.
So is one of those stakeholders leading the charge toward greater usage of mHealth? Who's leading the drive here?
I think it's kind of I think it's both parties. The reason I say that is in our day-to-day life, we've been accustomed to the use of technology. It's kind of become commonplace to have a smartphone, a tablet. There's technology in our vehicles. There's technology for banking, technology, go to restaurants, et cetera. And when it comes to healthcare, I think a lot of patients, depending on the generation, are starting to realize, hey, there's a lot of information on the web, related to healthcare. What can I figure out on my own? There's so many health apps, et cetera. So I think some of it's being driven because it's become more of a commonplace part of our daily lives. And then I think, the provider world is starting to see, hey, why can't we use this as part of our day-to-day practice? There's a lot of great resources. This makes things more efficient. We can connect with our peers more quickly and easily. And maybe we can affect some change, in terms of compliance and, outreach through the use of technology. So I think it's kind of an interesting evolution to watch as, both the provider, the patient, the consumer, all are becoming more and more tuned into what might be a reality of the use of the connected health technology in today's healthcare space.
So the summit's coming up, and what do you think attendees should expect to take away from their attendance at the summit?
Yeah, this year's summit is a little bit different than in the past, in the sense that, as you mentioned, beginning we've got kind of a three-prong approach of using the conference for mobile health technology, population health, and cybersecurity. They all intersect in today's world. Regardless of the type of mobile health technology you use, you've got to be concerned, tuned into, cybersecurity challenges, and, that's becoming more prominent, and the more aware you are, that the better off you are, and the more prepared you are to deal with those things. Population health, mobile health, really are hand in glove, to most effectively manage your population of different types of chronic diseases, and those are typically the largest cost that an organization has. Those who have multiple comorbidities, those who have frequent flyers, in terms of the need for care. If you can manage certain populations of care, you can hopefully get your arms around those costs. Again, there's not enough providers to patients typically, so help with that ratio. And, keep patients from having to go to the hospital, keep patients from having to be readmitted to the hospital. The more a focus can be on wellness as opposed to getting people well and, you know, will help the overall healthcare system itself. So the Connected Health Conference, I think, is exciting because you've got the great opportunity to network. And then, you know, this year we're offering CME credits for the first time. We've got two clinical tracks, and we've got some outstanding providers and, you know, trailblazers in health systems that are going to bring to light their stories, their barriers, their lessons learned on the use of the technology. And what better way than that, in my opinion, to learn and to grow, you know, someone that's been already out there doing it, you know, take those lessons and make something happen at your own organization.
That sounds really good, and of course, as you know noted, it's a great chance to tie it all together and put it into a much larger context. Well, that's all the time we have, David. I wish we could chat more about this, but I really want to thank you for being our guest today to discuss this excellent topic.
Absolutely. Thanks so much again for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, David. Again, David Collins, Senior Director, mHealth, here at HIMSS, speaking about the 7th Annual mHealth Summit taking place November 8th through the 11th, part of the Connected Health Conference. Visit www.hymsconnectedhealth.org for more details. You've been listening to Steps to Value. We'd like to thank our guests for today's episode, Dr. Ricky Bloomfield Jr. and David Collins. There's a lot of great stuff coming up in future episodes. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Any suggestions for people we should be speaking to? Do you have your own value story to share? If so, please reach out to us at this email address, value@hims.org. I'm Rod Pihowski. See you next time as we continue our look at health IT value optimization on Steps to Value.